Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in giving a warm Detroit Economic Club welcome to our roundtable.
Thanks very much. No question that this is encouraging. For those of us that have been charting and watching this happen for some time, those trend lines are all going in the right place, and it's a nice place to be. But I'm interested in your takeaways from this. Jeff?
Well, my first takeaway is, congratulations to all the businesses here and around the state in terms of, you know, where we have come from and where we're at. I mean, I think the comment was the fundamentals have led to this kind of growth, and I would say, you know, the transformation that we've had since Governor Snyder came into office from, 2010 to now has been just transformational. I mean, I think looking ahead, I think we're very bullish in terms of, the prospects in 2018. I think the report says that, and we've got some good tailwinds.
How dependent is that transformation on A, who's in the governor's office, and B, the macroeconomic environment? I mean, we've had a run of expansion of auto sales, for example, through 2017, the longest expansion consecutively in years since the 1960s. That is not something that A, is sustainable, and B, is likely to be repeated soon.
Yeah, first off, thank you for coming today. Survey was great in terms of the results, and I think we do have some tailwinds. Speaking to the question of the expansion, many of you know we're actually in the ninth year of a U.S. economic expansion, and there's only two other periods in economic history since the mid-1800s when we've been able to book consecutively years of growth for this long. In response to, I think, what you're hinting at, Daniel, yes, we've had a lot of tailwinds. We've also had significant gains in terms of business acumen here. We've moved up the curve clearly, and I think the results show that. The two takeaways I had from the results, when you looked at all of the comments that business executives made, I think Sherry gave us 9 pages of comments. I actually went through and counted them up in terms of topics. And the top 5 topics included, number 1, education was the most cited by the executives. We've got to do a better job. We got to really turbocharge, amp up, be holistic about the education and the talent. The second top topic, which I think is important, is so many comments about diversity, youth, innovation, getting, again, intertwined with the education theme. And I think, we have an incredible opportunity if we take it with a sense of urgency right now. Because, as I said, we're at the tail end, potentially, of this expansion. We've got to really pull up now and move ahead to that next phase.
But 61% of the respondents said Michigan has, quote, an educational system that is second to none, end quote. Since when? I mean, have they been paying attention to what's been happening with all the studies of education around the state? And it's not just an urban problem, it's a suburban problem. It's irrespective of geography, race, and income.
To be fair, though, Jeff, I want to defer to you on this in a minute, but just to be fair, we have a constellation of incredible educational institutions here in Michigan. I'm coming from not growing up here and coming here, I see the University of Michigan, Michigan State, Wayne State, Washtenaw Community College, and there are many points of light around educational excellence and success. And now I'm going to defer to you because you I think have some really important takeaways on that.
Well, I think I don't think anybody, Daniel, would support the notion that our K-12 system is firing on all cylinders, right? I mean, I think when you unpack it, right? As Ellen is saying, we've got pockets of great educational wealth here in the state of Michigan. But I think, you know, we have to aspire to something much higher. And we have to, you know, kind of come together and really look at the fact that, you know, the future of our economy in winning and losing is going to be based on, you know, the talent that either we produce or that we retain or attract. And so, you know, we're focused on this. You know, the governor has talked about, you know, his Marshall Plan for talent.
What's that going to look like?
Well, I think it's really going to take a holistic approach of saying, you know, we're going to try to rechange, you know, that you know, momentum in relationship to education. I mean, the Amazon HQ2 effort, I think, really shined a light on the amount of talent that is needed and the supply that we are producing. And we've got a gap. And we've got to close it.
Right. And so how do you, and you can't close it in 6 months or in a year. So how do you make that argument to Amazon to say, we've got a progressive business culture, we're competitive in a lot of different areas, to Ellen's point, but our education system is in some cases, if not at the bottom K-12 nationally, it's in the last five or six places, depending on how you measure it.
But we're producing a pool of talent right now that I think provides a fair amount of supply needed for Amazon and others. And I think we've got to look a little broader in terms of, it's not just Michigan that's going to produce this talent for potentially an Amazon or some of the other companies. We've got to start attracting more of that talent in. So, you know, this notion of working with Ontario and Windsor and some of the strengths that they have over across the river, looking down around, you know, Ohio State and Purdue, Notre Dame, Chicago, as really, you know, the pool that we're going to attract talent from. And one of the statistics that that we are seeing or have run across recently is, you know, right now in the Midwest, Michigan is leading the Midwest region in terms of attracting 25 to 34 year olds with bachelor degrees. So we are now importing that talent back into the state of Michigan.
What do you attribute that to?
Well, I think part of it is certainly, you know, the business environment and the businesses that are now growing and hiring here in the state of Michigan and the resurgence of the city of Detroit.
I was going to ask that. To what extent is that about what's happening in the city, a lot of the redevelopment? And the auto industry has not only become profitable again, but it's playing in an entirely new spaces for talent. It's competing against Silicon Valley for talent in a way that it never had to before. So there are young people who are coming to work for these companies that 5 or 10 years ago wouldn't even be able to find Detroit on a map.
Well, but I think the other interesting piece is, and the Detroit Chamber came out with a survey not long ago where they went out and they talked to high school students, parents, and counselors. And they asked their perceptions about the automotive industry. You know, what do you think of this industry? Do you aspire? Do you think that this is an industry you'd go to work for? They did the study back in 2014. The numbers, you know, were not great. In 2017, significant change in perception and thinking about, you know, this industry as being a place where they go to work. I mean, the auto industry, you know, today is very different. You know, it's a technology industry, and I think, you know, companies, Ford, GM, and others, you know, are making that case to young people.
Ellen?
Yeah, I guess I want to follow up. Many of you might have seen the Detroit Regional Chamber results on their annual report that came out a few months ago, and one of the stats in there was that our STEM jobs actually have increased about 16% in the last 5 years. At the same time, we're only 39% of our population over age 25 that has an associate degree or higher. And there are many different elements in that. One is, are we retaining the grads that we have? The answer is we still have some flight here. And the second, you know, th- thing about that is that in order to move to kind of this future of mobility, if we're going to get revenue flowing out of something just not just making the cars and trucks, but also getting revenue out of the data, we need data science, data analytics. We need way more urgency around those types of skills as we move ahead. Now, it's not going to happen overnight, but we can prepare right now. And the other point I want to make about the tailwind is if we're in the latter stages of this business cycle, we've got a lot of global liquidity sloshing around because mm-hmm. we've had monetary policy with the foot on the gas for several years. Now we're removing some of that stimulus. And we have to punch up now before we see the ambient level of the water start to drop. Global liquidity will start to tighten up. We've got a great syncing up right now, the global economy, but that's a cycle. And we have to really make sure we're prepared and we're putting these resources in place now for the future. It takes a while to grow that. And I think that's the point I want to make about just a sense of urgency on that.
But can that, you and I talked about this offline, I mean, to what extent is that going to move more quickly than the political and business leadership in Michigan can respond?
See, I mean, having worked in the private sector, so I'm guilty. I think we have tremendous talent in the automotive area, in the mobility area. We have significant assets here, physical, financial, and people. And if we work together on that and start developing, I mean, I think you pointed out, you know, if we have some of these program improvements and we get the private sector also participating, doing more apprenticeships, check out Working Nation. If you Google Working Nation, there's a VC investor in California that's working on helping to highlight what good local solutions are for amping up on skills, upskilling, people that have been around a while, starting a new job, need to upskill. Governor Brown, I think, is going to be unveiling an online community college system. You know, check out this stuff. We can do that. We have the capability here to do that.
Dan, I would just, you know, respond in terms of how government, you know, can keep pace. I mean, I think government now is able to respond to the market and industry much more rapidly. And I'll give you a great example. I mean, in the mobility space, I mean, the legislature passed some mm-hmm. of the most progressive legislation to allow for testing in autonomous vehicles on the highways in Michigan. We've supported M-City at U of M and the American Center for Mobility in terms of testing environments. Kurt Steidel and MDOT putting in sensors, you know, and the most kind of sensing into the roadway system for autonomous vehicles in Southeast Michigan of any state in the country. So I think we can respond, you know, when the market and when the industry is saying, you know, this is where we're headed.
The auto show next week is going to be unlike last year and unlike certainly ones in the past. It is becoming a very much a technology show. You know, Michigan is talking a lot about being the center for mobility, but that the automotive advisor for Canada will be there making the same case. How well positioned do you think Michigan is to really compete? I mean, they've got a lot of test sites. In fact, they've got more test sites than California, more than the whole country of Japan, more than the whole country of Germany. But I don't think they're yet seen as the center of that kind of development.
Michigan?
Yeah.
Well, you know, part of it is messaging, and we've started to invest some resources in promoting the Planet M brand to kind of, you know, position Michigan as this place. I mean, the governor, you know, is not only, you know, one tough nerd, but he's also one big geek, and when we were up in Montreal just a couple months ago for the Intelligent Transportation System World Congress, and you walk into this trade show and you see not only technology from industry, but also from infrastructure. I mean, I think we are very well positioned to leverage this, working with great technology companies here in the state of Michigan.
If you could change one thing to make Michigan more competitive in mobility, what would it be?
Wow.
That's a really good question. Because there's no...
That's why I'm up here.
Yeah. There's never one.
No,
there's
but I think there are,
great business leadership. We have, check your neighbors out here. We have incredible business leaders, have for a long time. We have the capability in terms of our education. If we keep moving it up, amping it up, we have that opportunity.
But
right
I can tell you, I write a lot about mobility, and there is a lot of skepticism out there. The people in this room may get it, and the people that work in the auto industry certainly get it. But the average schmo out there is like, I'm not getting in one of those things. That's never going to happen. I'm not buying one, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, we know tech adoption takes time.
Writing my column for tomorrow is going to address part of this. This is the future.
Yeah.
Now, you can say it's going to look, I'm not saying it's next week, or I'm not pegging a time as to when it's going to be here, but it is coming.
And let's talk about what's out there. So, for example, at the University of Michigan, we have a battery lab where we're testing, and it's open to all entrepreneurs, and they can come in and test different slurries, different components, keep their IP. It's not intellectual property that the university owns. That is fully subscribed. We have a solid state battery lab. We have M-City. We also have the American Center for Mobility, which is going to be up and running to develop this. If you read the latest research of Rod Lash at Deutsche Bank, equity analyst, he talks about the fact that Maven has made incredible gains in terms of their analytics and their ability to start rolling out transportation or mobility as a service. And that's what I meant about the data analytics and data science. Those are going to be key enablers to mobility as a service. I'm not saying, GM's going to make an operating margin of 10% tomorrow on that, but, we've got to look at that future of car sharing. The cost per mile is coming down, and if that's part of the future, we got to be right there with the assets that we have in this region.
And just so people don't know, Maven is the car sharing unit of General Motors. Rod Lash also says that he believes that General Motors is ahead and will be first in the market with autonomous vehicles, far ahead of Tesla,
right,
which is not outside of the auto industry in Southeast Michigan, not well understood.
So let me give you my one, thing we could work on. And I'm not sure this is, specific to Michigan, but it's understanding the implications within our cities, townships, and communities. The issue of planning, right? Mm-hmm. And how many more communities are going to need to build public parking structures, right? Or the communities that rely on a certain revenue stream from tickets that in theory nobody's going to be speeding anymore with autonomous vehicles, right? So is the revenue?
Have you ridden one yet? Have you ridden one yet?
No.
When you ride in these vehicles, they are so perfect. They go to the exact speed limit, they come up to the stop sign, they come to a dead stop, and then they turn and come to it. It's like, you just know.
Where's your override button?
The biggest accidents are going to be people, real drivers, rear-ending these cars. How come you didn't just coast to the stop sign?
You raise a really good point in that, how about if we start using that technology more here? Granted, my hybrid Fusion is it's tough in the winter. okay? But it's addicting. Once you start driving that, and I can, you know, have a proud point that I haven't been to the gas station since, you know, last May or something. You know, let's demo. Let's get more out there. Let's do more sharing. Come to M City and ride in one of these incredible driverless vehicles. They're so much fun. I mean, you know, and yes, they go slow, but once you're in it, you know what's funny? You forget that there's no driver after about 5 minutes. It's just so wonderfully safe. So I think there's a lot we can do to amp up our use of this technology. So then people are going to be saying, oh, that's not happening out in Silicon Valley. We're experimenting. We've got it happening here, and they're going to come here.
Well, they already do.
Because we got the stuff to do that.
I think you're right. I mean, we're already doing some of that. I think there's a May Mobility from Ann Arbor is testing some vehicles.
Yep.
with the Quicken people in downtown. We've got about 5 minutes. I'd be remiss if we didn't get the economic take on tax reform that just passed. What do you think it means for Michigan's economy?
That's a big question.
Well, you're the economist.
Number one. You know, we're all business people in the sense that we're all making forecasts, not just economists. Everybody's kind of responsible for the future. But I will tell you that when you look at the upfront depreciation, 100%, plus you still have the Section 179 for smaller businesses, that means that the after-tax, I'm going to geek up here a little bit, the after-tax user cost of capital. Your cost of capital is on the margin going to be a little lower. So that should help CapEx. You should have a little bit more thrust on capital spending from that. I think the tax cut, you know, going to a territorial system, you know, could potentially also be a stimulus. But I'm not looking, I mean, I don't get paid to forecast right now. Mustafa is here from GM, and you might want to ask him. But right now, I wouldn't jack up my forecast for economic growth solely from the tax cut. Yeah, we'll probably get a little bit of improvement, but I don't see it as something that's going to just, you know, get us up to nirvana on economic growth.
Michigan still is the highest producer, the largest producer of cars and trucks in the country. I think it's a 19% of the total production. In your line of work, what do you think this might mean potentially for manufacturing and in investment in Michigan, in the Midwest, if anything?
Well, certainly to the extent that there is more capital that's available and businesses are looking at expansion, you know, we think it's positive in terms of, you know, companies looking at reinvesting here in the U.S. And we think, you know, there's some compelling reasons why they should be investing those capital dollars in the state of Michigan. And, you know, when you combine that with some of the, you know, mortgage deductions and some of the personal reform as it relates to the tax changes, you know, in terms of cost of living, you know, we think we've got a competitive advantage there as well. You know, people out on the West Coast in terms of, you know, the cost to buy homes and live out on the West Coast, you know, when you're thinking of doing, you know, investment and growth, you know, you can pay a good wage and have a great quality of life and have, you know, a great home.
We live this kind of reinvention story on a weekly basis. A lot of us, you know, either work in Detroit or drive through, and at least I'm constantly amazed. It seems like there are new businesses opening up every week or 2 weeks downtown. I'm interested, as a kind of a closing thought, what your impression is as to how the narrative about Michigan and Detroit has changed. Not in the people in this room, but the people that you're meeting in your work outside of the Midwest, on the coasts, maybe abroad. How's it changed, has it not changed?
I think it has changed. I think it's kind of almost night and day. I mean, you think back to, you know, a few years ago when the city of Detroit was going through bankruptcy, and now you look at, you know, this phoenix rising, mm-hmm. You know, Michigan, Detroit are, you know, an easy sell these days.
It was only 3 years ago that the city emerged from bankruptcy.
Amazing, right?
3 years
ago. I mean, you know, it's almost like a light switch. And so, you know, when we're out talking to people, people are asking, tell us what the heck is going on there? What's, you know, how have you done this?
It's kind of fun to be asked that question because you can start telling people these things.
It's a lot better than other questions.
Yeah, absolutely right. Ellen, Jeff, yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great, great job. Speaking of talent, we're blessed to have the talent right here that we have on this stage. It's tremendous. So my job is to try to relay some of the questions that the audience had relayed to me. And we already talked quite a bit about the auto industry, but I'm going to ask a couple different angles, and many questions came in on along these lines. In the short run, we've seen volume dip a little bit this year. Is that cause for concern? And related to that, how do you perceive Michigan's ability to weather that storm, so to speak, when it inevitably comes?
You're talking about sales?
Sales unit volume in cars.
Oh. Mustafa's in the audience here. I would love to defer to you, Mustafa, but I'll give it a crack, given that I don't have a formal forecast. We've peaked out in terms of auto sales. But, you know, to get a severe kind of double-digit drop in sales, you're talking about an economy that's on the cusp of an economic downturn. And, you know, there's a few things that can really tip the scale when you talk about, you know, what are the signals we all can watch for a downturn, because that's when I would be worried about sales. And that's, you know, some policy mistakes, and in the past it's been oil price shocks. And the third one, because the way our economy is now kind of financialized, we are a financial flow economy now. And the third item is when you get these wicked errors in optimism. Businesses, people get too optimistic. You got bubble type factors in the financial markets. Those are the things that can bring the economy down with it. People will just, they won't be buying vehicles. I don't see those right now, although I do think we have some bubble characteristics. I put my thumb on that side of the ledger, and that's kind of where I would come out on that.
Okay. I mean, I think if you look at the number of jobs right now that are directly tied to the automotive sector, you know, significantly lower than they were back in 2008 and 2009, and yet, you know, the number and the volume is still significantly higher, mm-hmm. or very high. And so, you know, from a state diversification, I think we're much better positioned, you know, for that downturn or softening than we have been.
Okay, so shifting gears then, on the other side of the question, we talked a lot about mobility, and it's coming. When it's coming, we don't really know. I don't know that we know exactly what it means even when it does come. How much work have we done in terms of sizing the opportunity? In other words, there's many questions around, you know, people think about a factory having a multiplier effect, 6 jobs for every factory job or whatever. Is this new world we're going into that we're fighting for, that let's say we win it, what are we winning?
I mean, that's the point, isn't it? That we're kind of moving beyond that paradigm. I mean, it's great. The physicals are good in terms of plants and jobs and so forth. We're kind of moving beyond that, though. We got to have a mindset that's looking at, for example, if you know, RSQE is the forecasting group at the University of Michigan. You know, one of the points they made in their end of year forecast is we actually had a lot of growth of professional and business service jobs here in Michigan. We have more growth there than in a lot of the other sectors. I mean, it almost made up 50% of the job gains. What does that tell you? That's some of the service tech, data analytics, all the business services. That's the paradigm we have to be thinking about, not necessarily brick and mortar, but tech and who we're drawing in through all our digital connections. That's what's going to make the economy really take off here and move beyond just, you know, here's the plant. We love the plants, we love the workers, we love all of that, but we've also got to make sure we really love this new age economy and be part of it.
And there's also the chance the volumes would be substantially lower. I mean, if a lot of these vehicles are put into fleets and people are using those.
I would flip the question just, you know, a little bit, and what are we at risk of losing if we don't?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and another thought is, you know, the number one job in the United States of America, truck driver. So, you know, if we're thinking about, you know, autonomy and this transition, you know, we're also at the state thinking about the whole issue of, you know, reskilling and helping, you know, some of those individuals are going to go through a transition from, you know, one job or one career to another.
Okay, thank you. Jeff, this one is for you in terms of the Pure Michigan campaign and a lot of compliments around that. Is there still upside for Michigan left in that, particularly around tourism? Can we drive more growth through the vehicle of that campaign?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the statistics are for now the last 7 years, we have had gains both in terms of tourism expenditures and visitors to the state of Michigan. So, you know, our folks on the tourism side are looking at, you know, international tourists and other, you know, individuals who can be attracted. I mean, outdoor sports enthusiasts, you know, mountain biking, kayaking. I mean, you know, we're looking at, you know, kind of, you know, those millennials and looking at, you know, kind of what's next there. So there's a lot of mileage still there left with the Pure Michigan.
I want to say I think that Pure Michigan is just fantastic. I love it. And we at the university do a lot of work in the Energy Institute on, you know, kind of new energy, but also what's called Beyond Carbon Neutral. If you look at that website, you'll see a lot of the faculty working on all these ways to commercialize removing carbon from the atmosphere. So there's a lot of people kind of working, again, on it. I think it's part of the whole Pure Michigan theme, really.
Okay, sticking with you, Ellen. In terms of talent retention in the state and the university system's role in that, in terms of driving more young people to stay here, what more can our universities do?
I think the universities are really playing a pivotal role in making sure they've got the right programs for the new economy. And you look at what Michigan State has done, for example, in their program in Midland, setting up a whole new data science, data analytics group. We have a major effort at the university on data science and data analytics. And we got to make sure that we're bringing all those programs throughout all our curriculums everywhere, just to make it available if we have those resources. So more is better across the board.
Okay, I'm gonna go into a student question now. This was by far the most popular student question. Talk about sort of the gap between the well-to-do and the less well-off, and what Michigan as a state can do to sort of outperform our competition around the country, also again to drive more talent here.
That's a great
question. How can we do better?
Great question, and tough one to answer, but I mentioned about the comments from business executives talking about diversity, youth, innovation, inclusion, to make sure that we have programs that are open to everybody. That's a major asset we have here. The Kellogg Foundation has been supporting research on making the case for racial equity. Yeah, this is important. We've got to make sure that we, in the businesses, keep tackling diversity, keep tackling so you open up the doors to the kind of talent that today may be hidden from you. So every effort on that, I think we all have a role to play, and we have an obligation to play in that regard.
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, when I've traveled around the state and you go up into the Upper Peninsula and or you go into some other areas around the state and some small communities, I think, you know, there are challenges in some of these areas of Michigan where, you know, they don't feel like they are part of the growth of the economy and have fully participated in it. And I think the challenges we face are, you know, broadband and internet access. I mean, you know, it sounds crazy, but there's still lots of pockets in the state of Michigan where, you know, broadband and internet access is not a given. And so how do you fully participate in the economy if we don't, you know, create kind of that access? And so I think there's, you know, a number of things we've got to continue to keep working on.
All right, so we're going to have a little fun, get to know our panelists a little better. We're going to start our lightning round. And so I've got to shoot some questions at you kind of randomly, and I'll start out with, you both can answer these. The person you'd most like to have lunch with.
Wow. My husband?
Come on.
I know, I'm sorry, it's so corny, but I just absolutely love him so much. No, President Obama, I would love to have lunch with. If anybody saw that David Letterman interview, that was just wonderful. So, yeah, I would, I have to say.
So, I had lunch with my wife the other day.
So, she's done that before.
I have. You're probably somebody like, Thomas Friedman.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Something on your bucket list. What's left to do?
I checked one off my bucket list this past May, right before taking the job at the MEDC. I was over in Scotland and played golf with some of my close friends, and we just had a blast over there. So I guess next on my bucket list would be the Greek Isles.
Ooh. Okay. That sounds nice. That sounds really nice. Well, have you seen that movie RV with Robin Williams? The kids are planning an RV trip. And I know nothing, I don't know, we're going to a couple national parks, but there's an RV trip in the future this year to celebrate 40 years of marriage, wow. Of bliss, I should say.
You have a blessed husband, I'll tell you that. Okay, this is applicable, I think, to a lot of our young people, actually to all of us with the technology today. How do you disconnect? What do you do to disconnect?
Wow. You know, I'll tell you that
your boss isn't here, so he doesn't know.
He actually is very good about that in terms of, you know, work-life balance. While, you know, he talks about, you know, working in dog years, he also understands that that balance. Usually, you know, for me to disconnect, it's going north and, you know, mm-hmm. headed up to Petoskey Harbor Springs area where you can kind of, you know, disconnect.
Okay.
Wow, that's neat. It's beautiful. It's beautiful country. No, I love to run, so that is, but really, honestly, tradingeconomics.com. I unplug, I go to that website, and I just read about what's happening in all these countries. Just go to tradingeconomics.com. It's just delightful. It's so much fun.
I'll send you an email.
If any of you are thinking about getting a PhD, and that's how you disconnect, then you're probably on the right track. So just two more quick ones. How do you describe Michigan or Detroit in one word?
Oh, gosh. Super. Super.
Rising.
All right, and then lastly, advice to your 25-year-old self.
Oh, gosh. I wanted to squeeze in having one more baby, but it just didn't happen. So if I had started earlier. Oh, gosh. I know. Don't put that on anything.
Send that to your husband, right?
Wow.
I'm not sure what that advice would be for me. A lot of people in the room familiar with the movie The Graduate, and the gentleman says, one word, plastics. Two words, big data. And I wish I had concentrated a little more in my statistics classes in college.
All right, great. Thank you, guys. Great
job. Thank you.
Wow, what a great way to start 2018 at the DEC. Jeff, Ellen, Daniel, thank you so much. I know you people are very, very busy. Thank you again. A round of applause. Mike Ritchie, great job as presiding officer. David Baker, thank you and the Baker Group for allowing the DEC to participate in the survey, and to Sherry Petrus for presenting the results. And most of all, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for your time today. This meeting is adjourned.